Gino, what's the biggest difference between Gino in multifamily versus Gino in the back of the restaurant washing dishes?
Gino in the back of the restaurant was the mom and pop. Gino in multifamily is the 1500 unit make it happen.
Systems, baby, coming at you. Gino, amazing show. Biggest takeaway.
7 steps to systemizing a business. And there's no excuse out there. If you're the solopreneur, you need to start implementing systems today.
And he covers the overlaps, a lot of overlaps in these businesses for the core systems. Better check it out. Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenziano, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, G-Daddy, Gino Barbo. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I am not hangry. Ready to go. And we're going to be talking about one of your favorite topics today. How you doing, my friend?
I'm happy. You perked up a little bit. So you're engaged and we're ready to go. So this is going to be a good one. Yeah, today's guest is the author of Systemology, an approach to create time, reduce errors, and scale your profits. He seeks out and creates systems based on solutions to free business owners from the daily operations, the grind. So without further ado, David Jennings, welcome to the show.
What a pleasure to be here. I'm looking forward to this episode.
Hey, it is our pleasure. Now, we need to get to know each other a little bit, or Gino would yell at me and say, you just jump right in. So please just give us a little brief background on how you got started in business.
Yes, I have been in business since day dot. When I left school, I thought I want to be an entrepreneur and have tried loads of different things, everything from importing product from the US into Australia, opening a rock and roll clothing music store, selling Ooh. Pieces of a sports stadium to a digital agency. And a lot of what I do now is sort of systems consulting. So a lot of different businesses. And I try and it's funny, I always have this common thread of systems in each one of those businesses. When I've looked back to now, whether I was conscious or that was something I was doing subconsciously, systems, it's just always been part of what I do.
Nice. So before the show, I was going through checking out the bio, the notes and everything, and something that really caught my attention. And it was that you intend to create, your vision is to create the McDonald's of business systemization. Now that was like the thing that pulled me in. So I got to hear about this. What do you mean about creating the McDonald's of business systemization?
Yeah. So the overarching dream for our company is to free all business owners worldwide from the day-to-day operations of running their business. So to do that, we have to create a system that you can use to extract, organize, and optimize best practice, like the way that you do things. And that once we're kind of locked that system in, now we're kind of making it possible to move businesses through that machine, almost like a product line where the business shoots in at one end with zero systems, very key person dependent, very owner driven, and we show them how to identify and capture best practice so that they can start to delegate down and have other team members take over tasks and free themselves up.
Stacking the businesses over and over. I get this vision in my head from the McDonald's founder movie with the McDonald's brothers drawing the chalk, you know, yes. on the and then, you know, creating the system and then turn it over to Ray Kroc. You're the Ray Kroc in this, I'm guessing, yes?
Yeah, and I love that you know that specific scene. So I can tell, Jake, you are a lover of systems because that movie and that point.
I'm a lover of my sanity and trying to be free.
I can spot it a mile away because that's one of the key lessons I teach. A lot of people, they look at the end product of where McDonald's is today and they go, "Ooh, that's what a systemized business looks like. You can take a 16-year-old kid and you can bring them in and they can flip burgers over a weekend and learn how it's done because they've got amazing systems." And that's the product of 60 years worth of work. But where it started is what you talked about. It's out on the basketball court with some chalk and mapping out these, oh, where is the fryer going to go? Where is the cash register going to go? Oh no, let's move that next to the thick shake machine. And it's so raw when you first get started, yet a lot of business owners, they only see it what it is today, and then they try and start there rather than actually starting where you start with systems, which is right where you are, and they're a little rough around the edges, and that you just got to get going on it. So yeah, what a great way
The guys were bumping into each other, and they would redraw it. No, you go this way. The orchestra is beautiful. I love that. Yeah,
David, can you just simply define what a system is to all the listeners out there?
So for me, I try and simplify it because there's a lot of different language. People talk about processes and SOPs and standard operating procedures and workflows. So when I think of systems, I just think it's a series of steps that when followed, create a consistent outcome. So it's just identifying, and oftentimes it's just making something obvious so someone can easily follow it, almost like a recipe when you're cooking. So it's a series of steps that when followed, create a consistent outcome.
And David, how do you get the solopreneur to actually think of systems? Because I was in a restaurant, I had one restaurant for almost 20 years. And within 5 years, I had over 1500 multifamily units. For me, I don't know what the switch was.
Yeah,
maybe I had, you know, an immigrant father, different mindset in that business. We had no systems in that business. I was the business if I disappeared. But then when I met Jake, I decided, hey, wow, we can really systemize this business. We can figure it out. And just taking one piece of the business at a time and systemizing. How do you tell the solopreneur where to start? How do they start implementing the systems in their business?
Well, a couple of things. The first thing I do is I try and identify some common misconceptions about systems and try and break those for the business owner so that gets them to rethink and go, maybe what I thought systems were or the picture that I had in my head was incorrect. So oftentimes business owners think that they need to create hundreds of systems when you can apply the 80-20 and you can actually really move the needle with, you know, as little as 10 to 15 if you really select the core ones. But other things, business owners think, what's the point of putting systems in place when my team's not going to follow them anyway? And the truth of the matter is when you recruit right, you're on board, A players actually love to follow systems and processes because it helps to show them how to succeed and what, you know, sets the right expectations. People often think that systems remove creativity, yet the reverse is true. There's actually a lot of admin and business stuff that just needs to happen in the day-to-day operations. And if you systemize all of that, systemize the routine, and then you actually humanize everything else. And it's,
No, that was for Gino, but I wanted to stay here for a second because, you know, within our organization, you know, our CEO, our regionals and everything for our property management team tend to get frustrated with the property managers at time because they may hit those core systems, but we do, you know, in our business, we have it, you know, a lot of standard operating procedures and it can get drilled down a little bit. And then if the ones that happen occasionally or that, you know, they're not following this process that we put in place, there tends to be a frustration there. But the interesting dynamic is the property may be very very profitable. We may have high net promoter scores from the residents. So there's some really good things, but I can see it within the back office team getting frustrated at a time when the smaller systems that are important, but maybe missed pop up and they go, oh, we've talked about this. We trained you on this. Can you just speak to that? Because I'd love to take, you know, this back. This is personal right now. I'm stealing this to take it back to our business. I want to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, look, there's a couple of things that need to happen for systems to really start cranking. And firstly, you need to make sure that there's a real clear trigger on that system as to what kickstarts that system happening. And then you have some clear steps and then you have a clear ending as in what does it look like when you're done and what happens next. So the first thing is if you clearly identify all of that, that's the how, and you need to make sure that that's clear. Then you also want to make sure that you train on and make sure that the why is clear. So why is this important? And then it's just a matter of making sure that it's really transparent, obvious, and accountable. So the point at which that task needs to be done, once that trigger is fired, it is clear who is doing what by when, and that's very transparent. So there's clear responsibility. That then makes it much easier for the management team to be able to step in and kind of go, hey, you know why this is important. We've clearly identified the how. The who, that's you, and it's, you know, that who is doing what by when is clear. We have a deadline and this is part of your your role and your position, it becomes much easier to manage and get them on track. Generally speaking, you want to identify particularly those things in business you're talking about, those administrative things that just have to happen. You systemize those really quite well. And oftentimes you're delegating down and you're training new team members on those particular tasks. And it's the things that are that vary or that are using higher skilled team members, maybe them you catch the higher level milestones and you might not go into as granular detail for those more skilled team members. So that's oftentimes the way that we think about it. Just firstly, it's about getting the structure right, because once you got the structure right, it actually makes it much easier to manage the team. But you got to first.
My fear is always morale killer, right? Like if everything is from a high level is pretty damn good, it's threading the needle so it doesn't kill morale because you're getting browbeaten with systems. So there's always this balance that I feel like is super challenging to maintain, because you want someone to come in as a team member and enjoy what they're doing. And if they're performing, they're making money, the residents are happy, but then you're like, well, you know, you forgot this in the accounting and you know, whatever. And then it's like, shit,
yeah.
You know, it's like there's that balance that's, you know, sometimes folks struggle with.
And there's probably two things that jump out at me there. Firstly, going back to the discussion about McDonald's earlier and people systemizing like McDonald's when they probably don't need to. Oftentimes, they're systemizing for thinking that we need to get a 16-year-old kid off the street to do something. But most of us aren't running hamburger businesses, and we might not need to systemize to that level. And we're going to recruit team members with a certain level of skill. So you're right. There's definitely a balance that you need to find to make sure that you don't remove
that. You need to nail those two pickles, though. You got nothing if you don't nail the two pickles.
Right. So. A little squirt of tomato, a little squirt of mustard, and some onions. That would definitely be part of it. Like you want to find that balance right. The other thing you can think about is thinking about getting an administrative assistant. And, you know, I generally think about it in terms of ideally you want to have one in each department, but you might go, hey, maybe it's per project or, you know, manages a handful of projects. But getting an administrative assistant whose job it is to cross the T's and dot the I's, because we see it quite often with things like salespeople. Salespeople are notorious for not following process and filling out CRMs and making sure that the emails.
You're talking about salespeople?
So it's,
I never heard of that.
That's right. So having an administrative assistant who handles a lot of that stuff and is trained on that part of things can really make their job easy, because you want to make it easy for your A players to perform. You don't want to have red tape for red tape's sake. Systems are about efficiency and making it easier for everybody.
Ooh, what did you just say, Gino? Systems are about efficiency and making it easier for everybody. That's pretty powerful. I like that.
You might need that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, you might.
There's so many questions, Jake. You sure you don't have anything else? I know the show is the Jake and Gino show, but it's really the Jake show right now. So do you have any other questions for David, or can I jump in here right
now? Unless he's got something to say about pickles, I'm good for the moment.
A couple of really quick questions about if you're looking at a business and you're saying to yourself, just overall, you've done so many different businesses and so many different industries. Is there any systems that you can say overlap generality? Like I need this system in this business, and it really overlaps into other businesses.
What an awesome question. The more I've done this, working with lots of different companies, you would be surprised at how similar different businesses are. Usually the biggest area for difference is just the delivery in the core product or service. So client fulfillment, that space. But all businesses are going to need to do some form of lead generation and get business through the door. All businesses are going to need some sort of sales process, and they need to be able to convert those. All business is going to need to recruit and onboard and manage staff. All business is going to have a finance function to make sure that they meet their obligations. So there's actually a standard set of systems, I almost feel like, that you need in place, almost like we call the minimum viable systems. What is the minimum number of systems required to run your business? And you get that set in place. And then over time, then you kind of start to fill in some of the gaps, which helps you to start to remove the key person dependency. And then you can even start to borrow from other industries. Like I know Jay Abrahams talks a lot about that. Many moons ago from some of my early study, he would go into other industries, find systems and processes and what's working over here, and then pull it out of that industry and insert it onto another industry that's never really heard or thought about that. And that would end up being the competitive advantage.
That's a great point, because Jake would say to you that we're in the multifamily, but he would also say that we're in the hospitality business. So when we're seeing stuff going on in the hotel business, we want to transfer that over into the multifamily and how we deal with our residents. So,
you said something just before we hit record, and I thought, wow, I love hearing that. I think it was Jake had mentioned about the NPS, mm-hmm. the Net Promoter Score, and you were talking about applying it into your property business, mm-hmm. and you're talking about how the residents are enjoying it. Like you're bringing customer service and seeing how the clients, the residents are enjoying things. Talk about taking from one. Like that's, you don't normally hear
we
about
believe
that.
Renting a home is personal and our residents are our number one priority. That's
that
how is, we roll.
That's the pitch of the, that's the pitch of the show right now. So what
Check
we're
out
doing
the website.
and this is why when we were talking about the E-Myth, Michael Gerber telling us to quit the education and go into the investments. Well, mm-hmm. through the education, through Jake and Gino, we created a customer journey, a customer experience. We have a whole process of how we onboard our students, from writing emails to text messages to videos to sending out a swag box to onboarding them in the education. And we just we learned that through the education. And then we just created a customer journey with our residents, you know, as far as sending them a lease, giving them instructions on how to move into
welcome
the
welcome towels. You should welcome, have seen them this yeah. weekend. They were a fluff baby. Ooh,
they were
little
nice.
Bow, little blue bow tie, ran blue. Mm, wow.
So you can see how it translates over. And I love how you said that the lead gen, the sales, the recruiting, onboarding. I want to really dive into the 7 steps of systemizing a business, because I think this is awesome. The first one you write right away is define your lead gen. Can we go through these 7 steps real quick for the listeners?
For sure. So when people think about systemizing their business, the first question that pops into their head is, where do I start? And what are the first few systems I need to get in place? So in systemology, we have 7 steps to help a business owner get those first handful of systems in place. And the first one is define, step number one. And that's all about identifying the 10 to 15 systems you should start with. Now, the way that I do that, and everybody can do it, I mean, you don't need to get the book. You just get out an A4 bit of paper.
No, you do need to get the book. Get the book.
I need to see the book, Gino. We got to get the book up here. We got to slide.
I don't have the copy of the book here.
See it. All right, yes. So you get a copy of the book from Amazon. All right, there's step number one. Then we go through on this A4 bit of paper. On the top left-hand corner, you write, who is your target audience and what is the primary product or service that you're selling them? Because you have to start somewhere. And just because you don't systemize everything doesn't mean it magically stops happening, but we need to start somewhere. So we identify the dream client and the primary product or service. Then we map the linear journey that that person goes through from grabbing their attention through to delivering that core product or service. So, and there's a couple of rules for this little exercise. One is you only capture what you're currently doing, not what you would like to be doing. And because we're going to try and capture best practice and what's already working. And we don't want to put more than a few words in each box. This is not about writing the systems or over detail. It's just the flow of how do you currently get the attention of that target audience? And then when that audience sticks their hands up and says, I'm ready, how do you handle that incoming inquiry? Mm-hmm. What is your sales process once they're ready to go? Do you hop on a Zoom and have a chat with them? Do you meet with in person? Then do you prepare some sort of proposal? And you just keep working down the page, just a few words in each box, mapping this journey. How do you onboard them and deliver the core product or service? You know, when do you take the money? Do you take 50% up front and 50% on completion? And once it's all done and you're wrapping up and handing over, what do you do for the handover and to get them to come back? You start off by mapping that on a bit of paper, and you capture what we call the most probable journey, the most probable path, and that is where you start. You can go a step further as well and ask, where in that critical client flow is the pain? And the business owner, sometimes they may be consciously aware, or you ask them, hey, if you got 10x the number of clients, what breaks first? and they go, oh, you know, I can't deliver the core product or service, or I'm going to struggle with the sales, or, hey, I don't even know how to get 10X number of clients. And then that gives you an area that you can really start to narrow in on. And it becomes clearer because if you can systemize that critical client flow, you systemize how the business makes money. And if you can systemize how the business makes money, you can solve just about every other problem because you can bring in a consultant or hire another team member. But you got to first, at its bare minimum, figure out how the business can make money without key person dependency.
So it's basically looking for bottlenecks as well. Where is the bottleneck? So in our business, it would be fulfilling. If we scale up too quickly, we got to make sure that we have enough bandwidth to onboard our students and enough bandwidth to be able to fulfill the on-site boot camps and also the coaching. So as we're scaling, we don't want to go from a $2 million company to a $10 million. We don't want to outgrow our infrastructure. So we're trying to put these systems and processes in place as we're growing so we don't get caught. And if you can't fulfill, it doesn't matter how much you're going to make, you're going to get a bad reputation. You're ultimately going to go out of business. So thank you for sharing that. That makes a ton of sense to me.
Yeah, nailed it.
Yeah. And I think, Gino, with the property management, you know, because we don't syndicate deals and we're using in-house property management, every time we add a property on, it's a new district, it's new team members coming on board, and it's figuring out the property, doing the rehabs, doing the renovations. So there's a bandwidth issue there in those initial 6 months. And so that's why it's nice, you know, I think, you know, every 6 months to do a new larger deal for us, because it kind of allows us the bandwidth to eat what's on our plate and then on to the next one, since we're actually doing the management and the acquisition, where some folks just do the acquisition and can rely on third party. It's a different story.
So we got define number one. Number two, everyone write this down, is assign. Can we go into the second one, David?
So assign is just identifying where the knowledge already exists. So where a lot of business owners go wrong when they start to systemize is they try and make things the way that they would like them to be. And oftentimes it's the business owner who goes, I'm the only person who can do this. Or if we're going to create a system, I want to make
that's
sure
that's the biggest crock in the world, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Correct. Oftentimes you already have, if you've already got some traction and you got some team members, there are people who can do it to a good enough standard. And most small business owners struggle with consistency. You'll get a huge win if you can just capture, well, who currently does this pretty well or to a great standard? Maybe Jenny on the phones can handle that incoming inquiry really well, and she knows how to qualify. Well, let's figure out what she's doing, bottle that, and then have everybody come up to that standard, and you'll get tremendous wins that way. So the real key for this next step, number two, is going of the critical client flow that we just mapped in step number one, in number two, who knows how to do each one of those things pretty well? And that's that second step, which helps to get the business owner as much as possible out of the equation.
And let me ask you, if you don't have that business owner, this is the area, I mean, the employee, this is the area where you say, I need to find the person to fill this bucket, correct?
Look, if systemology works really well, if you've got a small team, there are some minor modifications you would need to make if you're in solo. So if you're in solo, one of the best things to do is, once you identify your critical client flow, is just to get comfortable recording little videos of you doing different things. Mm-hmm. You don't document it. You don't do anything. You just put it into a Google Drive and you put them into some different folders and you start recording, hey, here's how I handled that incoming lead. Here's how I issued out an invoice via MYOB. And you just, over a 6 month period, you go through a process of just recording little videos on everything, just raw in the moment as you're doing it. And then the next step after that is then we get you an assistant, some sort of virtual assistant who can, you work with them, you give them your copy of systemology and you say, this is how we do things here. And you get the assistant to watch those videos and to pull out the systems and the bullet points from that. So it's a slight tweak. It kind of depends on if you've got a few team members or if it's you solo.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Number three is extract.
So extract is all about getting it out of the brains of those team members. So if you've got some team members, and we talked about effectively how to do it if you're solo, you kind of record yourself doing the task. But if you have a small team, the way that you handle extract is, there's a little secret we found. It's a two-person job. So there's the person who knows how to do the thing, and then there's a separate person who becomes your documenter. And if you split that two out, because you'll find – your best team members are often as busy as you are. And a lot of people don't like writing systems and processes. It's not something that they love to do. And if you say, hey, I need you to document the way that you're doing this and that, they'll say, yeah, okay, I'll put it on my to-do list. And they never get to it. So we need to make that easy for them. It's a two-person job. And we developed a thing we call the system for creating systems, which is just what is the method for the way that you extract, like having a process for that. And that's a big part of this important. Number three. Yeah.
I'm going through this currently right now, Jake and David. Right now I'm going through, we have a student success specialist and my brother was doing it, but the systems weren't in place. We hired a new team member, Stephanie. She's rocking it. So her whole priority is creating this master document of everything that she's doing. And then from that master document, creating single documents of every task that she's doing, whether she's onboarding a student, whether she's recording a student win, whether she's posting on Facebook.
Why don't you have Marco do that?
Because he's not a systems guy, my friend.
That's an inside joke.
He is the anti-systems guy. He is the guy who likes to shake and rock and roll.
Bro, I don't need an email. Just text me.
So he's not that guy. And I understand that's not his strength. So I'm not going to. But now what David says, the great thing about it is that Stephanie, if she gets elevated to another position, to be able to onboard this new person is going to be a lot easier because it's entirely documented out. And I want everyone to be listening to this. This doesn't have to happen overnight. Rome wasn't built in a day. This may take a month, or this may take a quarter, or this may take 6 months. But no, at the end of that time period, it's so worth doing it, and it'll save you so much time. And Stephanie, who's implementing the systems, is coming up with her own ideas to be able to add as well. It empowers her. It gives her the accountability to be able to say, this is my job. And oh, Gino, by the way, we should be recording coaches and their surveys and doing that monthly. So to me, this extracting part is really cool. And to be able to do that with team members and give them the authority, let them own it, really, I think, helps out tremendously with the systems.
Yeah, she sounds like we have a name for Stephanie. We call them systems champions. So you found your systems champion. I love it.
That's excellent. Number four, organize. You've got the system hub here.
Yeah, as you start to extract the knowledge, you just need a place then to store it. Now, you want to have this central location. Sometimes if you've got your systems and your processes, it's sitting on Steph's desktop, or it's in someone's Google Drive, or it's sitting over here in someone's head. If it's everywhere, it's really nowhere. And it's about having a central location that all of this IP is stored. Now, I'm a little bit biased. We have a platform called System Hub to do that. There are other different ways. Even if you'd got started just using Google Drive, like having at least one location, that's better than nothing. Mm-hmm. And a big part of that then is making it very accessible and easy. So depending on whether or not you use a project management platform or not, the key is the point at which you assign the task. If you can link to the how-to document at that point in time, or make it easily accessible when someone is doing the thing, then it makes it infinitely easier and more likely that it's going to be followed. When it sits in a folder that no one ever thinks about, and you only look at it when you first onboard and train, and then you forget about it, it's not going to be nearly as effective if it's something that becomes an evolving document that everybody accesses. So yes, that step number four is all about organizing that knowledge.
And number five is to integrate.
So integrate, now you've identified some core systems, we've figured out who knows how to do it, we've extracted it from their brain and we've organized it. Now we need to actually get the team to follow it. And a big part of this is, as we integrate it into the team, is understanding where the team is and what the win is for them and the benefit. Sometimes when business owners introduce systems, the team member thinks, why do you want to systemize what I'm doing? Are you thinking about replacing me? Like, they think that there's
robots,
a risk.
Robots, robots.
Yeah, that's right. AI for everything. Whereas we need to let them understand that systems actually will help improve the way that they do things. And different things will appeal to different people. But you can say, hey, when you go on holiday and I'm sending you texts and following up on emails and asking, oh, where's this client up to? Where's that client up to? Because no one knows how to do it. And then when you get back, you spend the next 3 weeks making up for the 3 days off that you had. Well, what we want to do is we want to get some systems in place so that other team members can step in and keep things moving, so you can have a restful break. And by the time you come back, you can hit the ground running. So that's one reason. Another reason is you can say, Systems are going to help you move up in our organization. The way that you move up in our organization is actually to delegate down. So if you can document and codify some of your tasks and delegate it down to lower cost or less skilled team members, that frees you up to work on higher quality problems, which makes you more valuable to me, not less valuable. Mm-hmm. So there's a handful of different ways around how you frame this and let the team know. The good thing is, because of COVID, there's actually never been a better time in history to systemize than right now, because there's so much change that's going on and everybody's accepting of change. And there's change at home, change at community, change at work. As you start to say, look,
I'm not accepting of it.
That's right. Send it back. That's right. The ones that aren't accepting, you might fire. You say, all right, Jake, you're on your way out.
Sometimes you got to pull the trigger.
No, Jake likes to say he cuts the head off. Let me cut the head off real quick, baby. That's what you say. I agree with you.
Man, it's getting gruesome now, Gino. Wow.
the sixth one is to scale. Let's talk about scale. Yeah.
So if step number one is defining those 10 to 15 systems to deliver the core product or service, step number six, scale, is about identifying the other things. And I know, Gino, we talked briefly about that earlier, but it's identifying things like, how do we recruit, onboard and manage new team members? How do we get the finance function under control, and what are the critical systems there? So it's an identification process as you go through each of the different departments to reach that point we talked about, minimum viable systems. That's really where you want to get to. That's almost like
those out in the book, the minimum viable systems.
Pardon?
Do you list out the minimum viable systems in the book?
Every business is different. I list out an exercise on how you can identify them. And gotcha.
I know you're talking about the crossover ones. I didn't know if you created a minimum viable systems list that was like a general type list. That'd be kind of cool.
We do have one internally. Maybe that's something we need to circulate. That might be a good
little. It would be really cool. Yeah, do an infographic and send it over.
Yeah. I think that would probably be helpful for a lot. So let me scribble that down for myself.
And number seven, while you're scrolling,
sorry, I'm killing
that
the
down.
Flow here. I'm being selfish. It's like a greedy show on my end. I'm sorry.
Well, Jake, we haven't mentioned Chick-fil-A. You've only
It'd
mentioned
be beautiful.
McDonald's.
I'm holding it back, but I'm just saying, like, having like the general crossover minimum viable systems that you must have to run your business, because I think there's some overlaps there that are probably, I'm sure it's there. So,
optimize is number seven.
Step number seven is eat a Chick-fil-A burger. I've never eaten Chick-fil-A. Ooh. They don't actually have Chick-fil-A here in Australia, so I've only heard about it. But their chicken sandwich is the best.
You want no. There's systems. If you think McDonald's is good, you're playing in like the like little leagues. Okay, I don't know what Pop Warner or whatever. It is the systemization, the customer service, the experience, that everything scale systems and you know, like the franchise model could be. And so if you haven't experienced it is an experience when you go through, you haven't lived. All right. That's what I'm saying. We've done some podcasts with folks that headed up their marketing department in the past, and it just, I mean, it's an A+ if McDonald's is a C, you know, it's absolutely incredible what they've done.
Because I run a systems business, I'm assuming it would be a tax deductible expense for me to go and eat at Chick-fil-A.
I think you'd have to go there, interview them, you know, come to the States and like immerse yourself, and you'd go, holy shit.
Yes.
This is it. I've reached nirvana of systems, and Gino can speak to it, but they were having, you know, a hard time with their customer experience, and they wanted everyone to say, you know, when someone came through and said, thank you, the response is,
it's
my pleasure.
My pleasure.
Yeah. It's not you're welcome. Everyone in the organization says my pleasure. And so they actually, it took them years to figure out how to do that. Yeah. Gino, talk a little bit. I knew you have a better memory than I do.
So shameless plug, we had Steve Robinson, and I think David and all the listeners should go back and listen. He's been on the Jake and Gino show, and he's been on the 100-year podcast, and he discusses how their growth. They started out regionally in malls. Then from the mall, they went out to the single space. And then from there, they went from regional, they went to national. They opened their first store in New York City back in 2015. So it's been a nice 30 to 40 year run. But what I like about them is they got their core values in alignment. They know what their business model is. They know what their core values are, and then from there, being able to work on the operator, their whole thing is providing tremendous amount of value for an operator. So they get tons of applications for one space. Mm. So that one single operator, they put the operation up, they put all the money up front, and then they split the revenue and then the profits of the operator until the operator pays the spot back. So it's really profitable for the operator. And for the operator to hire, like you said, 16-year-olds who are really motivated, really live the core values of the company, it's an amazing thing. And you see people, 30 to 40 people online, and these kids run around with these iPads, and it takes them 6 minutes to go through that entire line and to be able to served so well. I'm not a big advocate of their food. I'm, you know, I'm not into milkshakes and, you know, chicken sandwiches. I'm more of the organic kind of guy. But other than that, I am supremely impressed because I had a restaurant, and to be able to recruit people who are making a little bit above minimum wage and to be able to deliver on their core values and what their mission statement is, and to deliver clean, I mean, affordable.
They measured and incentivized My Pleasure and these various touch points to allow that to take hold in the entire organization. So if a, you know, a franchise owner is over here, is scoring less than the you know, standard amount, he's not going to have the same incentives, and
he's not going to be able to get another store as well. So whoever
that was
does
a
really
huge
well,
component, yeah. Yes. Like if you're not hitting your my pleasures and these different things, you're going to be limited to one store. So your growth, your pay, everything is dependent on this. So they put their money where their mouth was.
Yeah, yeah. It was awesome. It was great.
I love it. This is perfect time for us to talk about this as we move into step number 7 around optimize, because the whole idea is you kind of get little sniffs of how these big companies are doing. But I think you mentioned, I mean, they've been going for 30 years or more, so they have just kept on stacking these 1% wins until they are where they are today. And then a big part of what I do with Systemology is we have to then go back to, well, where do you get started? How do we put the right framework, you know, getting those core values and your core approach right so that you can stack those 1% winners. And a big part of that is this final stage, which is optimize, which is a little bit counterintuitive because a lot of people try and optimize up front. But I say, when you're first getting started, you capture what you're currently doing and what's working, and that becomes the baseline. And by getting systems in place for the baseline, it means when you start to monitor, so optimize is first putting a dashboard in place and identifying some key metrics so you can listen to your business. And then when you start to make changes, you can actually see the changes and how they affect their numbers, because you might not realize without tracking the numbers or having a baseline that making a change up here will affect
here. I hate the second order consequences. You literally think you're doing something good, and then the damn groundhog pops up and you got to play whack-a-mole or whatever. That's the stuff that absolutely drives me nuts. So we spend more time now thinking about, okay, what's second order and third, you know, order consequences when we make a decision and implement something now, because we've been bitten so many times by this.
Yeah.
Can you give us an excuse? Can you give us an example, Jake, of a second order consequence? I may be putting you on the spot here, but.
Well, I mean, just recently, you know, there was a pay raise for the maintenance lead technicians, right? And that was, you know, pushing their salary up to be competitive with their supervisor. And so then if you do that, then the supervisor is going to say, you know, and it's just market dynamics that are going on right now. You know, there's, you know, supply and demand right now. It's a very hot, you know, labor market. So then when you do something like that, then you have to look and say, if we do this, then we're going to have to look at this. Because if not, in the past, it's been like, well, what the hell? And people start getting mad and they talk. So those types of things is a classic example. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can
because that's what I said. Sorry to interrupt. But when you're trying to do something good, like obviously we're trying to be more competitive, you know, offer more pay, but then it impacts other positions as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Oftentimes, like if you might go to work on, you know, you want to improve your sales conversions and you're optimizing to improve for that conversion, but then what can end up happening is maybe you're selling more up front, but you're picking the wrong customers. So once it gets into delivery, you're not delivering a great experience for them, or maybe they're not the right fit, or you've oversold them, and then you have a churn issue. So sometimes making a change up the top here then makes it more obvious down the bottom that, oh, wow, now we've introduced this issue where we're reducing customer satisfaction. So you definitely have to see, you know, part of it is figuring out your baseline, getting everybody to operate at that level. Because what Jake is also talking about, you can't start to strategically make changes and think about second order effects without making sure there's consistency. Otherwise, your numbers don't mean anything anyway, because everybody's doing their own thing, their own way, and there are different variations. So that first baseline, which is optimize, this idea of step number seven, is first get a dashboard in place to identify some core metrics that you watch. And then you start to put in a process where when an issue pops up, the first default response is to think about, ooh, where do we go to work on the systems here? What is the system's problem? How, it's always the system's fault first before we consider anything else, and how can we make adjustments? Mm-hmm. So I think that probably, though, as we go through those seven stages, you've got the define, assign, extract, organize, integrate, scale, and optimize. And each one of those steps takes you from I don't really have any systems in place to I've got a base level in place. And that's where systemology is different, because a lot of the process improvement methodologies that came before it, Lean, Six Sigma, and all those, and it's in the name, it's process improvement, but it pre-assumes you've already identified or captured what your process is and you're looking mm-hmm. to improve it. Systemology is more about process capture. I don't yet have something in place, and what do I do to get it into place?
I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I think it was Steve Robinson that we're talking about, that at a certain point in Chick-fil-A's growth, they added something called zero defects. And I think it's similar to Six Sigma or Lean. And as I heard that, and we've been evolving, that mentally was the next step of education and implementation for us, was to adopt a Six Sigma or Lean. So can you speak on that as yeah. we've gone through these various systems and you know, things in this education? What do you think a good next step for us would be? And you know, is there one that you prefer, and how that would apply to property management business?
I think once you've got, it sounds like you've got your base level of systems down. So probably the next step would be to get like a systems consultant in to have a look at what you're doing and then make recommendation, because certain approaches will apply better to different industries.
So we've had two.
Yeah.
So we've done, yeah, we've gone through two with actual consultants.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I probably want to, I mean, we could do it offline to dig in a little bit more yeah. into your business and what you've got in place, and then yeah. sort of point you in the right direction. But yes, systemology is kind of like that level one, get everything yeah. all set up, minimum viable systems. And then, yes, you want to kind of...
For efficiency, right? Six Sigma or Lean, that's more efficiency, right?
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head. It was what the Chick-fil-A guy was saying. It's about reducing waste and error is a big part of what they're doing, and improving the efficiency and making the micro changes in the already existing system. Once you're kind of measuring and you're knowing what's working, you can then come in and start to effectively imagine your business as one big machine, pull a part of the machine out. We go to work on it over here, and then we come back and we stick it back in the machine. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what some of these other methodologies yeah. would start to look at.
Yeah.
Before we go to the personal growth questions, last question here, any products, platforms that you like to use as far as system building, whether it's Asana, Monday, yeah. Slack, anything that you like to use?
I love to pair good how-to systems that we've documented in System Hub with a project management platform. So we use Asana. We've got quite a few clients that use ClickUp and some other ones that are using Monday.com. Doesn't really matter which one, but I love the idea of moving out of email for delegating tasks and making it really clear who is doing what by when. And those two together, SOP management software like System Hub plus project management software, they're key ones you want to get into place. And then as your team grows, depending on the size, we also use Slack more for instant messaging. So to grab the attention of a team member and say, oh, I've got this task in Asana here, can you go have a quick look? So we use Slack in that way. And then generally for email, we really only keep email for clients. Mm-hmm. We don't do any internal team communication. It doesn't really happen via email.
Thank you.
All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
get involved in multifamily, this is where you need to be.
The team you've built is incredible.
There is no egos here. Everyone is always looking to help the other person.
All right, we're back. That's a Asana, Slack, email. There's a lot coming at you there. How do you stay organized, plan your week, and remain efficient? Six Sigma Lean, with all that coming at you, do you have your own process for running yourself?
I think the main thing for me is about trying to identify the top few things that I'm working on at any one point in time. I want to try and just keep always narrowing that focus, because in small business and really business in general, there's an infinite number of things I could be focusing on. And it's always being ruthless in identifying, well, what is the biggest thing I can
Your
be
Pareto
working
guy.
On right now? Yes, the 80-20, 100%. What moves the needle? What and constantly asking and focusing on that question is what I think a business owner should be doing.
Gino, I'm telling you, those lower-level systems, he lets them slip. He wants to keep morale up. I'm telling you, I see it right now. I'm just saying. I'm messing with you.
No, we don't let him slip.
any books that you've read in the last year or so that have added value to your life that you want to share with the folks?
I really enjoyed Traction. I think that was an excellent book. I have read and reread that one. One that I've read recently is the One Page Marketing Plan that I found it's not common to find people sometimes in marketing that have a systems brain. And the author of that book, Alan, he crosses over with that. So it's almost like a system for marketing, which I quite enjoyed. Let me think, some other ones that stand out for me.
He's actually a reader. He doesn't do the Audible. He's looking at the bookshelf right there.
Yeah, sorry. I'm just spinning around. I think, another good one from a sales perspective, Chet Holmes, The Ultimate Sales Machine. That's another one I'm enjoying as well. I've read that one before, but sometimes I like to re-look at them. I think, depends on the problems that you're having, kind of which books you want to read. Like at the moment, we're trying to improve our sales side of the business. So I'm kind of starting to consume sales material.
So you're getting the leads in, but you're just not closing them. You got the administrative setup, but it's at the middle is the bottleneck for you. I got it.
Yeah, that's the one at the moment for sure.
You know, it's because those sales guys don't want to do anything except for sell. You got to free them up a little bit.
No, we need to get some admin systems in place for
them. That's what someone told me, right? So we got one from you already, and this is the personal growth section. So I want to talk about personal finance tips. And you said, you know, you're going to be coming to America and your tax-free holiday there to study Chick-fil-A. Any other personal finance tips that you do that you hack things or you're having success with?
As far as
and you might not have
finance,
anything, you know, you might not have some, but I think you do. I'm optimistic,
if you're,
cautiously.
The two or three things, it depends on where you're at in the game. But if you are, because I know we touched on the solo person up front, a couple of things you want to do is make sure that you really split out your business and personal finances. Run your business like a business and don't be dipping in. And, you know, if imagine your team as they start to grow and you've got a finance person, and if she's watching you try and sneak things through that probably shouldn't be there, that's definitely creating
that
separation.
It's not
going to
align with your core values.
Yeah, there you go.
She's going to say, well, he's telling me to be on the right side or right, but he's not. So why should I?
Exactly.
Right?
Lead by example. I think that's a big one there. The other one also, pay yourself a wage. I know some business owners, especially when they're getting started out, they'll kind of dip in depending on what the profits are and all those sorts of things. Treat yourself as an employee when you're working in the business. And over time, you then have a second distribution that is distributed to you as the business owner, but that's separate from your wage. And, you know, over time, you ideally want to see that profit distribution grow and your wage start to shrink potentially as you then start to get other team members in running your business. So again, probably the biggest takeaway here is really treating your business like a business from day one.
Amen to that. How can listeners get a hold of you? What's the hub?
Best one, systemology.com. There's the links through to YouTube channel. You can grab the book on Audible or Amazon, you can get it shipped out to you. And then within there, there's all the links to socials. And if you got questions, happy to help, or at the very least, I'll point you in the right direction.
Amen. Gino, you're up, big dog.
From rock and roll store to selling part of a sports stadium to digital agency to ultimately consulting and systemology, Mr. David Jennings has arrived, and his 7 steps to systemizing a business. I'll go over them real quick once again, because I want you all to write them down and start following them. It's defining, assigning, extracting, organizing, integrating, scaling, and optimizing. And if you're the solopreneur out there that's saying, you know, I can't do this, listen, you're listening to somebody right now who said the same thing years ago, and I didn't have my sanity until I met Mr. Stenziano there, and we decided to systemize our business. And it's allowed me to actually grow and create other businesses and don't have those limiting beliefs. Grab the book. I mean, David can show the book again. It's Systemology. You can go buy it on Amazon. It's a great place to start to be able to systemize your business and get your life under control.
Well said, sir. David, thank you so much for being here today. And gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term, thinking decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy. We make it happen. We'll see you next time. Take care.